Veterinary Journal On the Hoof podcast series, which aims to provide useful and accessible summaries of recently published scientific articles for equine clinicians. I'm Vicky Colgate, and in this month's episode, we will be exploring a paper entitled The Equine Umbilical Cord in Clinically Healthy Pregnancies. First accepted in December 2023 and currently available in the Early View section of the EVJ Journal website, this article was authored by Lawson, Verheyen, Smith, Bryan, Foote and Demestre and was the result of a collaboration between the Pathobiology and Population Sciences and Comparative Biomedical Sciences departments at the Royal Veterinary College and Rossdale's Laboratories, both in the UK. So, derived from fetal tissue, the umbilical cord develops from around day 40 of gestation and comprises two distinct sections, the allantoic and amniotic portion, containing the two umbilical arteries, which transport deoxygenated blood away from the fetus, and the single umbilical vein, which carries oxygenated blood to the fetus, as well as the uracus. It is clear that the umbilical cord is indispensable when it comes to maintaining fetal viability, and any abnormalities can have severe associated consequences. Indeed, in horses, the primary pathology seen in the umbilical cord is one of umbilical cord torsion and resulting vascular compromise. This is most often seen in association with excessive umbilical cord length and results in the loss of approximately 1.5% of pregnancies in UK thoroughbreds. However, despite its clear importance, the umbilical cord has so far received little research interest. The widely referenced range for normal umbilical cord length is 36 to 83 centimetres and comes from a study by Whitwell and Jeffcott in 1975, which described the umbilical cord anatomy of thoroughbred placentas from at-term pregnancies. More recently, Mariella et al. And Lancy et al. Also analysed data from at-term placentas and found a similar mean and range for umbilical cord length in thoroughbred, standardbred and mixed breed groups of horses. As well as this descriptive data on umbilical cord length, potential correlations between length and maternal and pregnancy factors have previously been explored, but with inconsistent results between studies. For example, Mariella et al. Observed no significant correlation between umbilical cord parameters and gestation length, mare age, parity, foal weight or placental weight. In contrast, a conference abstract by Whitwell and Wood reported that male fetal sex, covering sire and increasing mare age were all significantly associated with increased umbilical cord length. These contradictory findings therefore require further exploration. To date, there is also no published data on the growth of the umbilical cord through gestation, and currently available imaging modalities are unable to generate growth curves for equine umbilical cord length. In order for umbilical cord pathology to be recognised and risk factors for excessive umbilical cord length identified, first a better knowledge of normal umbilical cord lengths in healthy at-term pregnancies is required. In this study, the authors aimed to address these knowledge gaps by reporting the total, amniotic and allantoic umbilical cord lengths in healthy UK thoroughbred at-term pregnancies, describing the relationship between gestational age, umbilical cord length, fetal weight and fetal crown rump length using clinically normal pregnancies from mares dying during gestation, and identifying any correlations between umbilical cord length and maternal age, parity, paternal age and fetal sex. In terms of methodology, this was a cross-sectional study which involved prospective recruitment of clinically normal pregnancies from mares that died whilst pregnant and placentas from healthy term pregnancies over the period from February 2017 to January 2023. Taking the clinically normal pregnancies, the inclusion criteria for this group was a thoroughbred mare dying whilst pregnant between day 70 of gestation and parturition, with pregnancies deemed healthy at the time of death if there was no record of pregnancy-related clinical interventions prior to maternal death. As well as prospective case recruitment, for this group, records from the Newmarket-based laboratory were also retrospectively searched between 2008 and 2022 to identify additional clinically normal pregnancies from maternal deaths. The healthy at-term placentas were obtained from thoroughbred foalings around the Newmarket area over the 2017 to 2023 foaling seasons by convenient sampling. Inclusion criteria here was that the foal survived for greater than 24 hours post-parturition. Data collection was carried out by different clinicians, but two training sessions were carried out prior to the start of the study to ensure uniformity in measurements and consensus in definitions at post-mortem. In terms of data analysis, data was assessed for normality visually and using the Shapiro-Wilk test. It was found to not be normally distributed, and thus medians and interquartile ranges are reported. Correlations between the continuous variables were assessed using Spearman's rank correlation, and locally weighted scatter plot smoothing, known as lowest plots, were used to visualize the relationship between significantly correlated variables. Moving on to the results section, overall 66 placentas were included in the study, made up of 32 from clinically normal pregnancies where the mare died during gestation, with a median gestational age of 241 days in this group, and 34 healthy at-term pregnancies where the median gestational age was 339.5 days. The median umbilical cord lengths for healthy at-term pregnancies were 53.5 centimetres for the total length, and 29.5 centimetres and 25 centimetres for the amniotic and allantoic portions respectively. Gestational age was found to be moderately but significantly correlated with the amniotic umbilical cord length, with lowest analysis estimating an exponential increase in umbilical cord length with increasing gestational age, but with plateauing of the relationship at around day 200 of gestation. The authors theorised that this plateau is a result of the full-length potential being reached by this stage of gestation. There was no significant correlation between gestational age and total or allantoic umbilical cord length. Simple linear regression identified that gestational age was a significant predictor of fetal crown length. No correlations were observed between umbilical cord length and maternal age or parity, paternal age or fetal sex. The listeners are referred to the full article text available online for further results and to view all of the lowest plots. Overall, this study obtained preliminary baseline data on umbilical cord length in normal equine pregnancies, which will help to identify potentially pathological deviations from normal in the future. There was no observed difference in average umbilical cord length in this study, mean of 55 centimetres, compared to the mean of 55.95 centimetres that was previously reported for UK thoroughbreds, indicating that total umbilical cord length was not increased in the last 50 years in the UK thoroughbred population. The fact that amniotic and allantoic umbilical cord lengths were not correlated suggests that mechanisms for increase in length are not uniform across the total umbilical cord. The period of amniotic umbilical cord length increase estimated in this study aligned with the gestational age at which the high limbs of the fetus begin to enter the closed uterine horn at around 7 months of gestation. This may indicate the fetal movement in the amniotic sac has an important effect on umbilical cord length. Indeed, a study by Moesinger et al. Showed the importance of fetal movement in a rat model, where there was a 15% reduction in umbilical cord length in paralysed rat fetuses compared to controls, and a 10% reduction when fetuses were pexied. In this study, there was no significant correlation between maternal age or parity and any of the absolute umbilical cord lengths. This supports previous findings in Arabian pregnancies, but contrasts to the conference abstract by Whitwell and Wood, which demonstrated increased umbilical cord length in Paris and older mares. However, given the high correlation between parity and age, this warrants further investigation with multivariable analysis to determine any factors that may be associated with excessive umbilical cord length. As well as exploring umbilical cord parameters, in this study, the authors also showed that fetal weight and gestational age has a sigmoidal relationship and crown rump length and gestational age a linear relationship. This provides a valuable reference for assessment of intrauterine growth restriction and chronicity of pathology in cases of abortion and stillbirth. In the discussion, the authors do acknowledge that there are several limitations to this study presented, the primary one being the small size of the study population, which is further compounded by missing data. It is suggested that future collaborations with other diagnostic laboratories and veterinary practices to increase the sample size would be valuable in providing further data to increase our understanding of normal umbilical cord lengths throughout gestation. In conclusion, the study provides important umbilical cord length and fetal size reference values in clinically healthy pregnancies that may aid in assessing abnormalities in cases of pregnancy failure. Given that the amniotic umbilical cord length is an important factor in umbilical cord torsion, the data reported here suggests that there is a critical study period for amniotic umbilical cord growth between day 100 and 200 of gestation, something that should be considered in future studies. Lastly, this study provides reference values for fetal weight and crown rump length from day 60 of gestation to term, something which will help in assessing pathology associated with pregnancy failure. That concludes the summary of this paper, and I would encourage listeners to access the full article on the Equine Veterinary Journal website. I thank you for listening, and I hope that you can join us next time for another in the On the Hoof podcast series.